Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Merry Christmas, everyone!
Ho, ho, ho!
Yep.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, as you can see, we are all in the Christmas spirit. And why would we not be? Because we have a very special guest for you here today.
That's right. It is the man known as the chief gnome of the QI operation. He is the person who brought us four, including Anna, together to make No Such Thing as a Fish. It is John Lloyd.
Yes, the Christ figure to our three wise men.
Oh my God.
Okay. No. I'm rowing back. He's the producer of QI. He's the producer of every great comedy series you watched. Blackadder, Spitting Image, Not the 9 o'clock News, so much. And he's the author of a book called The Meaning of Lif, co-written with Douglas Adams 42 years ago. And it's just been reissued. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah, this book is basically a dictionary of things that there should be words for, but they don't exist. And so what they've done is there are signs of place names all around the UK that don't have any meaning attached to them. Mm. And they've attached these observations to those to create new words.
Like Bath?
No.
Bath has a meaning. Bath already has a meaning, sadly.
Oh, yeah, sandwich, for example. That is
no,
a...
no. You guys are screwing this up. Des Moines? The two little lines coming down from your nose to your mouth are the Des Moines.
Ah, nice. I like Ely. That's always been my favorite. Oh, yeah. The first tiniest inkling that something, somewhere, has gone terribly wrong.
Okay, so that's The Meaning of Lif. It's available in all shops now. It's a brilliant Christmas present, stocking filler. Main present, I would say.
Absolutely. But what if you're listening to this and it's too late to do the shopping and you need to get the fish lover in your life a gift? What to do is get the fish listener in your life membership of Club Fish, a wonderful, super secret, top secret, but also crucially accessible to everyone on the planet, members club.
Absolutely. There's loads of things on there. There's loads of bonus content. There is going to be a super special quiz coming up in the new year that we're going to announce. There are extra long versions of our normal episode. There is video episodes of Drop Us a Line, which is our audience feedback show.
Go to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish and you can get your membership there.
But in the meantime, please enjoy this episode of No Such Thing as a Fish with John Lloyd, CBE, Christ of the British Empire.
On with the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish, a weekly podcast coming to you from the QI offices in Holborn. My name is Dan Schreiber. I am sitting here with James Harkin, Andrew Hunter Murray, and John Lloyd. And once again, we have gathered around the microphones with our four favorite facts from the last 7 days. And in no particular order, here we go. Starting with fact number one, and that is... Andy.
My fact is, the Chicago River used to be sparkling, but only because of all the animal carcasses floating in it.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, 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 yum.
How do dead carcasses make something fizzy?
Well, they give off methane. They give off gas.
Oh, yeah.
They sort of... Basically, there's a bit of the Chicago River which was called Bubbly Creek.
Hmm.
And this is actually a good news story from this year because finally they've cleaned it up. But 100 right. years ago, it was really foul. It was amazing. Yeah. So it's this bit of the Chicago River which has been full of junk for a century. And the reason that it was so bad in that particular bit was because it's next to the abattoir district, the slaughterhouses, all of that.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so foul that bits of it were just solid at the surface. The river was just caked with lumps of matter.
Oh, yes. Wow. So you don't need a bridge.
No bridge required. No, no, no. Exactly. Really good. Chickens could walk on it.
Could they?
Completely unharmed. They'll just wander out over the...
Chickens can swim, so that doesn't really help them that much, can't they?
Can they?
Can they?
Or am I thinking of ducks?
Yeah. You think of ducks? Yeah.
But that's because the reason there were so many carcasses in it is because from 1865 to the 1920s, more meat was processed in Chicago than anywhere else in the world.
No.
Is that so? Really?
Wow.
And it's a big foodie place. I was interested in other kinds of food in Chicago. Did you know shredded wheat was invented in Chicago?
Was it?
Yeah. Premiered at the World's Fair in Chicago in 1893 and invented by Henry Perkey.
Yeah.
Okay.
A nice guy. And also 31% of children admitted to the University of Chicago Burn Center over a 10-year period were scalded by instant noodles.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
wow. Well, I've been there.
To that center?
No, to the world of scalded hot noodle situations.
Yeah, you got to let those noodles stand.
Gotta get to them. Gotta get straight into them. This, you say sparkling. It didn't look nice, did it? Right, the bubbles were purely the sparkly element.
Yeah,
it's
fetid. I'd say rather than sparkling.
Because I got some sparkling water here in front of me, and it's beautiful and clear.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Put a dead mouse in here before we started just to help it bubble.
Well, you say in the bubbly water, though, a liter of bottled water contains an average of 240,000 detectable plastic fragments.
Oh dear.
Ooh, so don't drink that.
Don't drink that.
Here's another one, James. Reusable water bottles can have 40,000 times more bacteria than a toilet seat.
Oh, well, this isn't reusable. This is one that I'm going to chuck away into the street afterwards. I'm going to chuck it into the Thames and see what bubbles up.
Can I tell you a thing about bubbles?
Yes.
Or bubbly water.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So London has the ability to spritz its own water. The Thames. It has two boats, the bubble boats, which can inject gas into the river.
Is it just for fun? Or?
It's not. It's really important. It's only occasionally needed, right? So when there is really hot weather and when there are sometimes sort of sewage overspills, which mostly won't happen anymore because of the new big Thames Tideway Tunnel, which we've talked about, blah, blah, blah. But basically, there are times where you just need to inject oxygen into the water so fish can breathe.
I see. Oh. So there's a sewage overflow. That means there's not enough oxygen in there, so you need to get some in.
Exactly. Huh. And there are two boats. They're called Bubbler and Vitality. It's an absolute last resort. You know, it's not, if you're using the oxygenate the water boat, it's a really bad sign.
Yeah.
But they can each inject 30 tons of oxygen into the river every day.
That's really cool.
This is necessary because in 1957, the Thames was declared biologically dead. And by 1970, it was so polluted, it had started to dissolve the hulls of boats.
Wow. What?
It was that toxic.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot better. I think it's a lot better now.
It's really interesting because the word Thames means river in Celtic. Same as the word Tyne means river from Old English word Tinan, which means to dissolve.
Mm.
Okay.
Isn't that weird?
Mm, nice.
Yeah. It's amazing that we can tell how much oxygen is in the Thames. Like, that's pretty extraordinary that you would take a sample of one spot and that would tell you the story of the entire
Thames.
Right. That seems quite wild.
I had this thing quite recently where they put a little thing on your finger and they tell you how much oxygen's in your blood. How the fuck does that work?
Is it because all your blood goes through your finger at some point or another?
No, it can't. Can it?
Can it?
No, it can't.
No,
Andy.
It can't.
That's
it
not
can't
how
be.
It works.
No, because some of the blood goes out to your leg and then back to the heart.
Yeah,
and then some
goes
out to your finger and then back to the heart.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works. And I don't want to know, actually.
No,
I
you're right.
I prefer to think it's magic.
It's magic.
Okay, here's some stuff on corpses and carcasses. Do you know there's a theory that anthrax can lure you in?
Really? Oh.
Yeah, so the idea is that anthrax gets into an animal,
okay.
The animal dies, and then the animal sort of fertilizes the ground, and so it gets more lush, and then that gets more animals to go to it, and then those animals catch the anthrax and then they die. And there's an idea that that's how it's evolved. That's its life cycle. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
That's very cool.
It's so weird that stuff. Oh, well, I guess I make that sound as if it's like the anthrax is going, psst, hey, hey. Like, you know, I've turned it into a human in my mind.
You know, we have to anthropomorphize a lot of these facts to make them interesting. But yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and the other thing that I found is I went to a place called Paderac in France. It's a big sort of cave. And they said that in the 20th century, in some parts of France, there was a law that if your animal got diseased and died, you had to go and throw it into the nearest chasm.
Oh, chasm.
That's what they called it. Like, to be fair, the one in Paderac is like a big chasm. They thought the devil lived down there and stuff. It was like one of those, you know, it's like a sinkhole kind of thing.
Right, right, right.
But the problem is that the rivers go underneath these chasms and they're attached to the water supply. So you throw in your anthrax cow. Or sheep, and then it gets into the water and people get sick that way. So it was a misguided law. Many of them are.
Question.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a chasm and a gorge?
Oh, well.
I would say that a chasm is caused by a collapse of land to make a hole, whereas a gorge is caused by a river.
Right, so it's like a huge...
Like almost like a V-shaped valley caused by a fast-flowing river.
Yeah.
A gorge, sorry.
Right. A gorge. Right. And a canyon? Same,
but bigger.
Big canyon river. Is an American gorge?
Big dry river.
Do you know what a current bum is?
A current bum?
A current bum is a rock under the surface of a river, which gives that sort of hump thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's covered in water.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, the water goes over a boulder.
Is this meaning of lift, or is that just
It's not the meaning of lift. It's a book called Landscape by Robert McFarlane, which I highly recommend, about dialect words all over the country.
Very cool.
The river is now clean, Andy. You said the Chicago River,
yes.
Right? Except once a year, it looks like toxic goo.
Oh.
And that's because of St. Patrick's Day. They dye the river, the entire river, green.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely?
Well, I celebrate Irish heritage, James. I don't know why you don't.
It's weird because I am part Irish. But I refuse. I just straight up refuse.
Well, I don't know what...
I think the question is it okay? Like, are they putting in toxic goo or are they putting in food colouring?
Food colouring. They started with toxic goo and that quickly got bad feedback.
I think they did because it started... by accident in 1961 when some people were putting dye into the water to see where like a leak had come out or to see where the water flowed. And then it was around St. Patrick's Day. So everyone thought, they did that on purpose. And they went, we didn't, but let's do it on purpose in future. But that dye was toxic.
There you go.
That's very funny.
The Chicago River is a friend of the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, so it is.
Because in 2004, the Dave Matthews Band drove over it in their bus and dumped an estimated 800 pounds of human feces onto a passenger sightseeing boat.
Oh, yes.
But why did they have 800 pounds of feces on their bus?
They've been saving it up.
The tour bus. That's a hell of a tour. Was it through a grating in the middle of the bridge?
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine being on that boat? I mean, celebrity feces all over you.
Wouldn't know it was celebrity, though. If you knew it was celebrity, that might take the edge off.
Do you think if you saw Dave Matthews waving out the window, you'd go, how lucky are we?
I don't think Dave Matthews is of a level of celebrity enough.
No?
No.
Do you know, I know his face.
I'd want it to be A-list.
You want Taylor Swift's bus travelling?
Sort of, yeah.
Right.
That's going to be mixed with Travis Kelce's.
Oh, gosh. too much.
In the meaning of live, Chicago is defined as the foul-smelling wind that precedes an underground train.
Oh, wow.
But it might, of course, be one of Dave Matthews' farts.
But it was known as the Stinking River, wasn't it? The Chicago River. That's what locals called it all the way through the 20th century.
It was. It sounds like it was so bad. And a lot of the contemporary descriptions of how awful it was come from this brilliant book, The Jungle, by a writer called Upton Sinclair, who wrote, it was a journalistic expose, really, of the slaughterhouses and their practices and just how, you know, appalling the quality was there. So I'll just read you a couple of sentences of it. The material brought to the surface was as black as ink. A considerable amount of gas was given off, which was so evil-smelling that it could be detected even above the prevailing odour from the stockyard pens.
Oh, my God.
I know. And sometimes the river would catch fire,
because it was so full of crud. And sometimes people would wander out. I mean, presumably you're chasing a chicken and you're trying to get it back, and then they just disappear below the surface.
Could they get out a bit into it, you mean? They could walk over some glub and then disappear? That's insane. Upton Sinclair, he was known as like a muckraker. He wrote fiction that exposed what was going on in society, and quite a few laws were changed off the back of different books that he wrote over the course of his life. So he's really important. But I also have a book of his at my house, which is called Mental Radio. And it's a book he wrote all about his experiments with telepathy, because his wife, Mary, believed that she had telepathic ability.
So weird how these really awesome people get a bit woo-woo towards the end.
Yeah, yeah. If you look at all these, all the people who invented quantum mechanics, for example, all became really mystical towards the end of their life because, you know, Schrödinger.
I guess it is kind of like, it's almost like magic, isn't it?
Quantum mechanics. Yeah, quantum.
I think so. Yeah. I think you go, you once you've done a lifetime of science, you think, actually, but why? Why is there something and not nothing? Because I've got a friend who was a Nobel Prize winner called Brian Josephson, who invented the Josephson Junction. So, a superconductor guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is basically slightly sent to Coventry in Cambridge because he's become a Buddhist and become very spiritual. And he's the most wonderful person.
Mm. I think in the University of Cambridge, they don't say sent to Coventry. They say sent to the University of Warwick.
That's very funny. But yeah, Albert Einstein wrote a foreword to the German edition of Mental Radio. So even he was interested in it. But yeah, so Upton Sinclair was a very interesting character.
It sounds like a good, it's a good name for a radio station. Welcome to Mental Radio. It's no music, it's just pranks. That's it. It's just Steve Pank, wall-to-wall Steve Pank.
But the thing about telepathy, I'm slightly telepathic.
Oh, here we go.
I can do, there's an online site where you can get scores way, way, way above chance.
Right.
It's that you have to guess where a thing is under a hidden map, as it
That's called Minesweeper, isn't it?
I'm actually getting telepathic messages right now from Andy and James saying, Dan, what the fuck have you done to our podcast by introducing this subject? Can you hear it?
I can hear it.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hey everyone, this week's episode of Fish is sponsored by Saily.
Dan, have you ever been abroad?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever needed to use the internet abroad?
No.
Okay. On with the podcast. No, no, no.
Not Dan. True. It's my everything, the internet. I'm basically on holiday with the internet.
Okay, well that says more about your family relationships than it does about you. The point is, if you have ever been lost abroad or needed an internet connection and you haven't had any Wi-Fi immediately available, you will understand the difference that a local SIM card can make. An eSIM such as Saily gives you an internet connection wherever you are. It saves you money on roaming fees, and it's hugely important and useful.
That's right. The destruction that can occur via you not taking care of how you're using your phone overseas is insane. You can rack up so much money in the bills you're going to have to pay, and Saily gets rid of all of that. It's available in over 200 destinations. It's got 24/7 support. It honestly is one of the best things you can do if you're going abroad.
Yeah, it's extremely useful. So if you would like to get Saily and give it a go, all you need to do is download the app, Saily, S-A-I-L-Y. You download the app, you buy a plan, you install your eSIM, and that's it. You're good to go. And if you would like an exclusive 15% discount on a Saily eSIM, just use the code FISH at checkout.
So download your Saily app now, use the code FISH, and you'll get 15% off. Do it now.
On with the podcast.
On with the show. Okay, it is time for fact number two, and that is my fact. My fact this week is that in Hawaii, A tightly guarded secret that used to be passed down from generation to generation was how people used to tune their guitars.
Mm. But cool. Surely everyone knows that. There are those little knobs, aren't there, on the end?
Well, see, I don't know how to tune a guitar.
Honestly, if we left you in a room with a guitar, you'd work it out.
Really?
Pretty fast. Yeah. If you turn those knobs, the sound changes.
Well, I know you turn the knobs, but I don't know. I'm very impressed when I see anyone do it.
Well, you, and also you
really shouldn't be.
You wouldn't know what you were tuning it to, right?
Oh, because that's it.
That's
right.
The thing. So a guitar, if you play a classical guitar, like I would tune a guitar, or maybe James would tune a guitar, your tuning is E, A, D, G, B, E. That's sort of the classic. Then you can make classic E notes, G notes, all that. It's basic stuff.
If you don't understand that at all, do we, Andy?
No.
If you tune it that way, that means wherever you put your fingers on the guitar, it will always sound the same.
Yeah.
So right. You just know where to put them because you know how each one
what
is tuned.
What happened to every good child deserves fun? What happened to that? Is that what it
oh,
is?
Oh, that's the staves of a musical score, isn't it?
Okay. Every good boy deserves favour?
Oh, that's it, yes.
Yeah. But this is very interesting because this is slack key guitar in Hawaii. It's a Hawaiian guitar tradition that has been part of their world for hundreds of years. And the idea is that they all tune it differently to an open set of notes. When you then play it as an open chord, so you don't use your other hand, it plays a lovely chord. Mm. And every family seemed to have designed its own different set of notes unique to them. And that's what would be passed down from family to family. Now, the reason that this happened is almost to do with what you're saying, Andy. So when Captain Cook first came to Hawaii, there was a guy on board called Captain Vancouver, who was the captain of the next boat that came to Hawaii. And he brought a bunch of cattle. And the cattle arrived and it was roaming around. And the king of Hawaii didn't know what to do with them.
Where is this going?
This is the origin story of the guitar in Hawaii. It's really interesting.
Now, in those days in Hawaii,
we always tied an onion to our belts.
Cattle's roaming free in Hawaii. They don't know what to do. So they decide to bring in some Mexican and Spanish cowboys to teach them how to farm.
Vaqueros.
Yes, exactly. They brought their guitars. They played the guitars. And then when they left them the guitars. After a while, a bunch of them went, how do we even tune these things? And they weren't quite sure the classical tunings. So they had to create their own tunings. And family by family, this is what they did. And all these beautiful songs started emerging.
Dan, you sent around a link, like we always do with these facts, just so that we can check that they're true. And this, we all do it.
Dan's facts. No, just Dan's facts.
Not, I mean, this idea came about because of Dan's facts, but we all do it.
Yeah.
And this was about a guy called Raymond Kane. But he has a middle name that I wonder if you read his middle name.
Oh, yes, I did, yeah.
Well, you're so good at pronouncing things, Dan. I wonder if you'd like to just remind us what his middle name is.
Oh, my God, where is it?
It's just there.
Oh, okay, well, this is going to be embarrassing for you because, as it turns out, this is my middle name as well. So it's Kalioalohapoinaaleohelemanu.
No, Helemanu.
You got so close.
I was doing the Australian
pronunciation. Do you know, Alan Davis and I went to see the Swedish version of QI years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And Anders, the producer, very sweetly said, John, it's such an honor to have you here as the deviser of the whole thing. Would you kindly introduce the guests? And he gave me the list of Swedish guests and I read them all out, and their audience were in hysterics because I didn't get one syllable right. They were screaming with laughter.
Who was Raymond Kane?
He was, good question, he was a slack key guitarist.
Okay.
And I think the thing you sent round was an obituary of him, maybe.
It was, yeah, that's right. Okay.
I don't play the guitar at all, but I do play a bit of piano.
Yep.
And obviously one thing I know is about piano is where middle C is. But I didn't know, and this is the most interesting thing I think I found out in the whole month, is there are three middle Cs on the guitar. Did you work that out yourself when you were tuning it?
If you're tuning on your own, you'll use your lowest E string as a guide to the next string, because you can play all the chords.
I do it the other way, from the highest E string onto the next one. So what you do is you find
But do you know where middle C is?
Yeah. Mm,
okay, name it.
Okay.
First case, fret of the second string, fifth fret of the third string, and tenth fret of the fourth string. I don't know what any of those things mean.
Okay. This is also why the quiz failed. You give the answers before the person gets to guess.
Oh, yeah.
But then I'm allowed to say, yeah, I knew all that. Yeah. I get the point.
Trade secrets in music.
Oh, yeah.
As this is a bit of a trade secret, yes. You know, how these Hawaiian families kept their guitars. There is proof legally that an album can be a trade secret.
What does that mean?
Okay. Have you heard of the Wu-Tang Clan?
Sure.
Oh, yes. Okay. I've seen them. I saw them in, really? In Aspen, Colorado. Amazing.
Lyda used to be in the Wu-Tang Clan.
The LZA. Yeah. This is one of the most amazing things. Imagine you're at a Wu-Tang gig. You turn around and John Lloyd and Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean is standing at a Wu-Tang Clan gig. That's where you went to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is this about the time when they released one...
That's it.
One record or something? Yes.
They recorded a secret album in 2007, and they made one hard copy of it. So it doesn't exist outside this hard copy, right? Yeah. And a wealthy American guy called Martin Shkreli.
Yeah.
Controversial.
He bought, very controversial character, bought it for $2 million. And there were very strict restrictions on how it could be played or reproduced or all of that for the next 90-odd years. Eventually, in unrelated reasons, he was sent to prison for fraud. And
No. I think they might be slightly related to the fact that he had $2 million to spend on one record.
That's very true. Yeah.
I think, just for the...
you're absolutely
just
right.
Just for the lawyers listening.
So as part of that deal... as part of him going to prison for fraud, the album had to be sold off, right? And it got sold off to a crypto firm called Pleaser Dow. And then when Shkreli got out, nonetheless, despite the album having been sold off, he started playing it for loads of people online.
Yeah.
And the crypto firm sued him. And all of this led to a judge decreeing that an album can be technically a trade secret.
I've got two secrets from the meaning of Liv, two secrety words.
Oh, cool.
Mary Tavy, which you probably know is a place in Devon. A Mary Tavy is a person to whom, under dire injunctions of silence, you tell a secret you wish to be far more widely known.
Lovely.
Useful one. And Tuki Tuki, which is a place in New Zealand. A Tuki Tuki is a sexual liaison which is meant to be secret, but which is in fact common knowledge.
Nice.
Chartreuse.
Oh, yeah.
Drink?
Yes, yeah. Green.
Yeah. The recipe is only known by two monks.
No.
Apparently so.
Really?
Yeah. There are all these recipes, aren't there? Like the Coca-Cola one famously is a bit secret.
Supposedly.
You know they use chartreuse to dye the Chicago River, of course. That's
yeah. That's why the fish are so cheerful all the time. Yeah.
The Coca-Cola one's really interesting. So they have like a secret formula, right? Which they say, oh, no one can work out what this is and all that. And actually, you can kind of pretty easily work out what it is. But obviously, Pepsi has the same thing because they make... arguably the same drink. I know they're slightly taste different, but they're pretty much the same thing. But why do they not have secret ingredients? Like, they don't say, oh, we have a secret thing called 7X that nobody knows about.
Yeah. Is it because no one really likes Pepsi? Is that it?
No, because I think you'll find that advertising campaign in the 90s showed that everyone loved Pepsi. And today we're sponsored. No. Basically, they just use normal law and just make people sign non-disclosure agreements, and if they give the secrets away, they sue them and stuff,
right?
Rather than saying that they have some sort of secret ingredient that no one can know.
Because it does seem mad that you can keep, like, with so much, like, sort of...
Regulation
and all the warnings on the back of a packet. Well, you can just have a secret sauce in there?
You have to sort of... I think you have to register it somewhere, but it's accepted legally as a trade secret. That's the thing.
Got it.
So it is a special legal framework.
It's got an injunction on it, basically.
Kind of. But there is a thing...
Anyway, it's orange, vanilla, cinnamon, and a few other
things. Don't say the final one!
And dead animals.
Well, we had an email from listener Esther Nelken, who says, you may have covered this previously, we haven't covered this previously, but in order for Coca-Cola to be recognized as kosher, a rabbi had to be told the secret formula. In 1935, Rabbi Tobias Geffen signed an NDA and was allowed to investigate the ingredients.
Wow.
And she adds, I couldn't find who the rabbi is today who holds the information.
That's amazing. That's a Dan Brown novel waiting to be written, isn't it?
You're so right.
I've got some specifically Hawaiian secrets here.
Oh, cool.
That physicists at the University of Hawaii have recently solved the problem, the secret of how washing machines get clothes clean. It's never been known until now. Wow. So there are now two physicists who know the secret of how that works. And the other one is that 2018 was a bad year for Hawaii. They had a massive volcanic explosion. And the authorities warned people not to toast marshmallows over it, which is very good advice. But they also had in 2018 38 minutes of panic. after a wrongly pressed button set off an alert warning of an incoming ballistic missile attack.
Yes.
And the way it's connected with secret is the governor of Hawaii couldn't correct the false missile alert for 17 minutes because he didn't know how to log on to his own Twitter and Facebook accounts.
Wow.
They were kept from him. There's only one rabbi in Hawaii who knew what the password was.
That was mad, wasn't it, when that happened? Yes. I think a lot of people just started going around telling, telling people about their secret liaisons and stuff like that. Because
Dookie
was everywhere. It's the end of the world.
And we did it in the book. We were writing the books of the year at the time, and there was definitely an article about that.
Yes.
And I think it was the second time that the person who accidentally sent the alert out had made this mistake.
And it was something stupid, like there were two buttons next to each other.
I think it was a drop-down menu.
That's right.
And it was a drop-down menu, and it was send nuclear alert, brackets, test.
Or send out of office reply.
Yeah.
Okay, it is time for fact number three, and that is James.
Okay, my fact this week is that in 1874, the world's largest pearl got lost down the back of a sofa.
And was this a kind of Princess and the Pea style situation?
Expand.
Easy. Okay.
They kept putting cushions on top of the sofa.
Yeah, and it was only found when... I can't remember the original fairy tale now. Is it the true princess can identify the world's largest pearl down the back of a sofa?
Is it, James? Is it the...
It's not that.
It's not that.
It's not that complete misremembrance of a fairy story. Anyone else? No, this is something I read in BBC History magazine. It was in an article by Kate Williams, and it was about the La Peregrina pearl and a sofa in Windsor Castle and how the two things interacted in 1874. And it was a woman called the Duchess of Abercorn who was at a party with her husband, James Hamilton, and she momentarily lost the pearl down the back of the sofa, but it was enough that it was recorded and we now know about it.
Is it such a massive pearl that it would seriously damage the sofa?
No,
how
it's
big
not.
Is it? Yeah. Would you feel a lump if you sat down on
that's
it?
That's what I'm trying to... Like the Princess and the Pea.
Oh, I was thinking more the current bums.
Current bums, yeah, true, yeah.
If you sat directly onto it with no sofa involved, you would feel it on your bum.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
In the sofa, I don't think so, because it is about 11.2 grams in weight, which is about the same weight as the world's smallest monkey.
Okay. If you sat on the world's smallest monkey, would you feel that?
You'd feel it,
was
but
it
not
squash you? It's like a cushion.
You'd feel it for sure, but not necessarily if it was inside a sofa.
And can you give us a size rather than the weight?
No, I'm afraid I can give you more versions of the weight. So it was 55.95 carats, 4 ounces, or 223.8 grains.
How long was this very large or small item with a certain weight? How long was it lost for?
It was lost momentarily.
This is a fascinating fact.
It was...
Wait, I've lost my glasses. No, there they are on my head.
It was interesting enough that Kate Williams wrote about it in BBC History magazine.
Yeah, well, I think the most interesting thing is how small monkeys get these days. Staggered. An adult monkey that weighs 11 grams.
Have you seen them? There's like these monkeys that you can put them on your finger and they just hold on like a beanie baby.
That's a toy. That's a toy.
No, you do. They do exist. I've seen videos. That's incredible. I've seen pictures of them.
It is incredible.
I think why it's notable is that this is not just any ordinary pearl. It's not just that it was the world's largest at the time. This is La Peregrina.
Yeah,
said
that.
This is the wanderer. This is a pearl that has been part of so much history. You can see it in the portraits of Mary Tudor. She was wearing this pearl. It made it all the way into the modern day to Elizabeth Taylor, who wore it in two movies. And it's just had this amazing history. So the idea that you could lose this at all.
I know. And just to say on Elizabeth Taylor, she got given it by Richard Burton, her husband, a couple of times. And she lost it. In a dog's mouth again momentarily.
Yeah.
And the pearl was the same size on both occasions, but yeah, she lost it and she was really worried because this was a very iconic piece of jewelry, and she looked in her dog's mouth and there it was.
Extraordinary.
So pearls, famous pearls. This one's called La Peregrina, right?
Yeah.
There is also another incredibly famous pearl called La Pellegrina.
Oh, my gosh.
No.
It's so weird. And this one is also one of the most storied pearls. This one's been through France, maybe Louis the 16th. It was involved in the October Revolution in Russia. Not in a
what
key role.
What does Pellegrina mean? Because Peregrina means a female pilgrim, presumably, doesn't it?
Peregrina is the wandering one, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, like and female I don't, wanderer.
La Pellegrina. I haven't actually written down the meaning of it. Don't know.
Isn't it a bottled water, isn't it? Pellegrina,
San
isn't
Pellegrina.
It? It's a female bottled water
That's it.
Person.
That's it, yes. So you know how mollusks of all sorts make pearls?
Yeah.
Not of all sorts, a few specific sorts.
So what is it, like they get a bit of grit in them and they put exactly. something around it or something?
Yeah, there's the main idea is that pearls form around a grain of sand or a bit of grit. In fact, it's almost always a parasitic worm that gets inside the mussel or the
romantic.
Oyster or whatever. I know. And they just coat it in the sticky stuff and then they keep on coating. And that's how a pearl develops. But this is the amazing thing about how mollusks make them. They can moderate the thickness of the layers that they produce. I find this really weird. If a layer of a pearl is a bit thick on one side, the next layer will be thinner on that one side in response.
Oh, that's why they're circles.
That's why they're perfectly round.
Right.
It's because they're constantly balancing out to make
clever.
It. So I know. And that this was studied by scientists who cut pearls with a diamond wire saw and then polished them and counted the layers and measured the thickness of all the layers inside.
That's really
it's craft. They're actually crafting.
It's real craft.
Them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really beautiful.
You know the oysters that you get pearls in are not the same as the oysters that you eat.
Is that so?
Yeah, they're different species. They're in the same family, but that's as closely as they're related. So the Eton oysters are in Ostreidae, and the pearl oysters are in their Pteridae.
I thought when you said Eton oysters, I thought very upper class oysters.
Very well educated. So those two types of oysters are less closely related to each other than we are to the world's smallest monkey.
It's a welcome second appearance for the world's smallest monkey.
He's arrived again.
Trying to make this
world's smallest monkey. He's the size of a pearl now, is he? Yeah, little. It is.
It's the size of the world's biggest pearl at the time, which actually it's not the world's biggest pearl anymore.
No, absolutely.
The world's
not.
Biggest pearl is the Giga pearl, which was discovered in the Philippines and is.
The pearl of Lao Tse, that one?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's 27, just over 27 kilos, and it's the size of a female chimp.
That's a hell of a jump from 11 grams.
Yeah.
To 27 kilos.
But it's not like a really beautiful one. It looks kind of a bit ugly, doesn't it?
But it's not a perfect round pearl.
No,
it looks a bit
it's
like
bumpy
a.
And...
It looks a bit like a manky brain. I think I saw a picture of it. It looks a bit. Yuck.
We didn't know we had it for a long time because this Filipino man who owned it just kept it under his bed. He didn't know what it was. He had it there for 10 years and eventually he just had to get it out of the house.
You see, if James's fact would be a lot more interesting, the pearl was lost for 10 years down the back of the sofa. Then we could have paid attention. But it's a thing that interests me is...
Yeah, James.
The thing that interests me is value, all right? So why do we decide that pearls are valuable? So, for example, Mark Twain's great quote, I wonder how much people would pay for a soap bubble if there's only one in the world, that wonderful iridescence you get on bubbles.
Yeah.
And in some cultures, mother of pearl, that marvelous thing you get inside the shell, is more valuable than the pearl themselves. And Japanese divers used to throw away the pearls because they're collecting the mother of pearl.
Wow.
And yet, according to Suetonius, the Roman historian, the main reason Julius Caesar invaded Britain, do you know what it was? It wasn't tin or lead or anything. They had the biggest supply of freshwater pearls and mussels.
Really?
Oh.
Do we still have pearls?
Biggest in Europe. Okay.
I've been to a pearl farm in the UK somewhere. I'm sure maybe it was in the Isle of Wight or somewhere.
Right.
But do we make pearls in this country?
We do. I don't. Not in a, there aren't any pearl factories, I think, but freshwater pearl mussels are a big deal.
Okay.
And they're being rebred and reintroduced, and they're more common in Scotland because the water's just a lot cleaner up there, basically, and the mussels can survive. But yeah, you get British pearls.
Great.
And in fact, they're incredibly weird. They release millions of larvae into the water. That's how they breed. It's called a sperm cast.
yep.
Which is
the
looking around.
Podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And then they hope to get themselves swallowed by a passing salmon. This is their tactic. This is their life cycle, basically. They spend a year living on the gills of this salmon or a brown trout. And then they drop off the gills after a year and they burrow into the riverbed. And they can live in a riverbed for 130 years.
What?
Wow.
There will be some...
Wow.
So there could be pearls in the UK which remember Queen Victoria, or which were around in the time of Queen Victoria.
Yes.
I just find that... That's crazy.
That's very nice. Yeah. Well, they might remember then, if they remember that time. We were talking about the fact that this pearl was lost at Windsor Castle, but something was also lost in a sofa in Buckingham Palace while Queen Victoria was queen. And that was a 14-year-old boy.
Oh, careless.
Yeah. They just lost a boy.
How long was it there for? Momentarily or for 130
years? Was he larger or smaller than the world's smallest monkey?
He was called Boy Jones. He's quite famous. Edward Jones. He was the first ever celebrity stalker. Broke into Buckingham Palace multiple times. Sat on the edge of her bed once. Took her underwear.
Boy Jones.
Yeah, he was he hid under a sofa.
Was he actually a boy?
Yeah, he was 14. Yeah.
14.
I don't think he was taking the underwear because he was a pervert. I think he was just wanting to show that he would, he'd been there.
Well, he was a 14-year-old boy, so he was probably a bit of a pervert. that's all 14-year-old boys.
Yeah. Tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I think they caught him and then they let him go and then they caught him again and then they sent him to Australia.
Yeah, they were like, okay, you've broken in twice. Where can we put you that will just make it that slight bit more harder to get in Australia?
Wow. Do we know what he did in Australia?
I think he disappears from history. Really? Yeah. I think if memory serves.
Mm. I think he took the underwear with him and he opened a brand of shops called Victoria's Secret.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
You say the world's largest pearl. I researched the world's largest things.
Okay.
So the cuckoo in the world's largest cuckoo clock weighs 23.5 stone.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
The world's largest container ship can carry 4,282,600 mattresses.
Oh, but how many marmosets? That's what we all really want to know.
And in 2018, in protest at losing access to the sea after a war with Chile in 1884, Bolivia displayed the world's largest flag. Do you know how big it is? It's 3 meters wide and 200 kilometers long.
Sorry, yes, I did know it. Yeah. Just continuing that quiz from before.
Damn it, another point to James. You are killing this quiz.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with Smart Card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Okay, it's time for our final fact of the show, and that is John.
Okay, my fact is, for a shipworm, the most nutritious part of an ice lolly is the stick.
The perfect companion for a day at the beach.
Yes.
You have the lolly, they have the stick.
It's like Jack Sprat and his wife.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Now, you obviously all know what a shipworm is, I'm guessing. But for people who don't know, shipworms are not worms. They are a kind of clam. And unlike normal clams or mussels or oysters, you know, reference the pearls, they don't have a proper shell. Their shells have evolved to slide off down the body and become a sort of amazing little jaw thing, like a little hat, like a little helmet, but covered with lots of tiny teeth. And they use these to bore into, they start as tiny larvae, as thin as a needle, and they bore into ships and wharves and piers and that kind of thing and destroyed them by honeycombing them.
Wow.
They're the bane of mariners and seamen and sailors since forever. I mean, the most extraordinary thing.
They've altered modern history, haven't they? Like, basically, they have transformed the world we live in. They're known as the termites of the sea. It's such an invasive problem.
There's something mystical and magical about these things. There's a shipworm in every historical event that's on water. Right. So in 1503, shipworms honeycombed the hulls of Columbus's ships on his fourth voyage. Two of them sank and had to be abandoned. And the other two, they just managed to get to Jamaica, where they were considered unseaworthy. They were trapped there for a whole year, all of Columbus's men.
Wow.
In 1580, when Francis Drake reached London after circumnavigating the globe, the Golden Hind was rotten and spongy from shipworm and never sailed again. On James Cook's first voyage, his ship HMS Endeavour was so badly damaged by shipworm, it had to be hauled onto land and repaired three times. It just goes on. Shipworms helped England defeat the Spanish Armada, for Christ's sake.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Because the Spanish ships were much bigger and more powerful, but the shipworms made them weak, and so cannonballs would go straight through this rotten wood.
Right. That's very cool. Yeah. I mean, the cannonballs had something to do with it.
Their point of origin isn't even known, really, because they've just been spread worldwide by boats. So anytime a ship takes it somewhere...
Cryptogenesis, like the cryptid factor, that's what it's called.
Oh, really?
If you don't know where something's from, it's called cryptogenesis.
Right.
And no one knows where the cryptid factor came from.
Or where it's going.
Wikipedia is very, I'd say it's very horny for shipworms. It describes them as a group of saltwater clams with long, soft, naked bodies.
Wow.
It's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah. We all have naked bodies until we put clothes on.
Well, that's true. But are they long and soft?
Podcast at QI.com.
This is for Spermcast, Andy.
Well, I saw a description of... They don't look very nice, shipworms. It says a shipworm's head under its little shell helmet looks like a blend of wet lips and diseased intestines. And they have no eyes. And they breathe through their bottoms.
I think if you look like a mixture of wet lips and intestines or whatever it was, it's probably good that you don't have any eyes.
It's true.
Well, also, they don't need to... They're very interesting things biologically because they don't, I think, have to find a partner because they all start out... male. They just live as teenage boys, basically, on ships, burrowing into it. Then they just...
Stealing queen's underwear.
That's it. Yeah. I think they just release sperm, then they turn female, then they just absorb the sperm that they just released when they were a teenage boy, and they use that to mate.
Mm. That's easy,
isn't that crazy?
It's an incel's dream.
It is. It absolutely is.
So wood-eating creatures are called xylophages, as I'm sure you know. Now, the question is, why do they eat wood? And the answer is because wood is mostly made of cellulose, and cellulose, get this, is entirely made of glucose. Did you know that?
Oh.
So if you can digest wood, it's extremely nutritious. Yeah. I mean, it really is. Yum. That's why a shipworm would love an ice lolly, but only the stick it would want, because there's more glucose in the stick than there is in the lolly.
Wow, I see.
And that's why you shouldn't eat the stick of your lolly, because it's actually just
very
sugary.
For you.
Yeah.
If you had the right bacteria inside your stomach, you would be able to eat it, right? Because it's in all these animals that eat wood, they have some special bacteria in their stomach that can digest the wood. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So why do we not do that? There must be some kind of pill you can take to give you that, like some kind of Yakult that will give you the wood bacteria.
Yeah, like a bacteria transfer, right?
Because imagine a race of sort of super soldiers who can just
eat
trees.
The forests that the enemy are hiding in.
Exactly. Yeah.
makes the end of Macbeth very different, doesn't it?
I just want to give a shout out for the positive side of shipworms, because obviously they look disgusting and they do all this damage and so on. But, one study estimates that shipworms have sunk more ships than pirates. I thought that was rather lovely.
Wow.
But they also do good things. And there's nothing good or bad in the universe. It's just, it depends which angle you're coming from. So, for example, they're responsible for cleaning up more driftwood in the world than anything else. And rotary axon, so the way they drill is that little toothy, helmety thing rotates 8 to 10 times a minute. And this inspired Marc Brunel, Isambard Kingdom Brunel's dad, to invent the rotary tunneling machine that dug the first tunnels under the Thames, and which is still essentially used today.
Wow.
That's all to do with shipworms. So cool. Good for them.
Very cool. And they gave us the Industrial Revolution.
Did they?
Shipworms. Oh,
kind of, yeah. So because Britain needed metal ships to stop the shipworms from burrowing, we had to get lots of metal. And what did we have? Because Julius Caesar wasn't bothered about it. Lots of copper. And so we had to get at the copper, but it's underground. So you need to do lots of mining, and then there's lots of water under the mine, so you need to get the water out. How do you get the water out? You create engines. And Thomas Newcomen created the steam engine to drain mines because we needed the copper, because we needed it to get rid of shipworms.
Brilliant.
And that is essentially what started the Industrial Revolution.
Amazing.
It's so brilliant. Cool. It's so cool.
Lolly sticks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember when they had jokes on them? Those were the days, weren't they?
Did they not still?
No, they got phased out in 1988. Do you know why they got phased out? There was a reason that they gave, and then there was the actual reason.
Because of woke. Because of woke.
In 1988.
Yeah, because of early woke. What?
Why?
What was the reason they gave?
Out of date jokes.
Come on. In Britain, the land of the cracker.
The land of the cracker.
Why would it...
Okay, I'm going to give you that. The official reason was that people had more sophisticated tastes than to... I mean, they're selling these to children, right?
Sophisticated, what, joke tastes?
Yeah, yeah.
What do they want? Like lengthy observational stuff on the stick?
Just Stuart Lee sets. But the actual reason is because they were selling them abroad. So you had a big batch of ice lollies that you made, right, and they wouldn't all be sold in English-speaking countries. So there's no point putting English jokes on there because 50% of them would be in Spain or France or whatever.
Yes. I think that's such a shame. I remember having jokes on my lolly stick.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
But, I don't remember that.
But I was not born. I was born in 1987, so I can't have been having them when I was a year old.
Well, they occasionally bring them back for a very short amount of time. I think in 2012, Walls did a thing where they asked a load of people to send in jokes that they were going to print on the sticks, and maybe for 6 months they did it. But yeah, so it comes in and out. But generally speaking, they got phased out in 88.
Oh, damn.
I have some ice lolly stuff. Did you know that it was invented in Turin?
Was it?
Yes, along with vermouth, Nutella and Ferrero Rocher, all invented in Turin. Invented in 1937, the choc ice. That was the first, original ice lolly. It was a good year for sweeties, actually, 1937, because Maltesers, Poppets, Smarties and Rolos were all invented in the same year. Isn't that strange?
Mm.
What was that sort of nexus of sweet inventions?
They must have just invented a lot of the machinery that does it.
The Canterbury explosion. The Cadbury explosion.
Really good.
Yeah.
Really also, good. You mentioned...
So close to being a joke that almost... It really... No, I really like it.
The Cambrian, yeah.
The Cambrian explosion,
the
yeah.
Yeah, I know.
The Cadburymian.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It's so close
It's very close, though. That's my radio show. Welcome to Very Close to a Joke.
But so, should we talk about... While we're talking about eating things, I think people eat shipworms in some places.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't look nice, but they are delicious. And they are also incredibly nutritious. Shipworms have more protein than beef, as well as being rich in iron, zinc, selenium, and vitamin B12. And you said, Dan, they're called sometimes the termites of the sea.
Yes.
And a termite contains twice as much protein as sirloin steak.
I'm not going to say taking off, but I think the world's first modern shipworm farm was founded a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Because they convert boring old wood to very edible protein.
But they're so brilliant because if you're farming salmon, for example, in order for the salmon to have something to eat, you've got to collect four times as many tiny fish for this. It's ecologically incredibly damaging, fish farming.
Yeah.
Whereas you just chuck a crappy old log of driftwood into the thing and shipworms eat that, and it's incredibly effective environmentally.
Yeah, and they grow really fast as well.
And they grow, the shipworms grow, 20 times as fast as mussels?
Yeah.
Which obviously we all like.
Are we eating shipworm food then? Is it out there?
Not yet, but it is. Two guys at Cambridge, David Willer and, bizarrely, a guy called Ruben Shipway, have started a thing called the Naked Clam Project, because as Andy said, they're sort of naked because they don't have a shell. Mm. And they reckon this is going to solve world malnutrition because not only they're very nutritious, they're environmentally safe. And they've got this amazing thing is in the tanks where these shipworms are nibbling on the driftwood, they chuck in a few garlic capsules as well so that you get ready garlic clam.
Oh, my God.
You know what? Next to my house, not far from my house, there was a restaurant opened where all the food was made out of insects.
Oh, yeah.
This was in the last year.
Wow.
It lasted about 3 months because people do not want to eat that shit.
Oh, you must have gone, presumably.
I wanted to. Uh-huh. And then by the time I tried to buck it, it was already closed down.
Right. Oh.
But you wonder why not. I mean, one of the many xylophages, along with beavers and woodworm, death watch beetle, is woodlice.
Yeah.
Which are wood-eating things. And they are closely related to, they're not insects, they're crustaceans. And we don't have a problem eating clams or lobsters, but woodlice,
Well, it's because it's got lice in the title. But the same with shipworms. If you call them shipworms, people aren't going to want to eat them. If you call them long oyster, yum, yum, yum.
Oh, that thing Escoffier? When Escoffier first wanted to serve frog's legs, he called them nymphs of the dawn.
Brilliant. Yeah, but we can come up with a good name for shipworms. We can get in on this.
Well, naked clams doesn't do it for me. Wouldn't want that. Doesn't sound
long, nice, soft, naked, bodies.
Chocolate willies. How about that?
They already exist.
There's one shipworm we haven't mentioned.
Oh yeah,
the giant shipworm.
Oh yes, we must have that in.
Cufus polythalamia. It was legendary for a long time, Dan, right up your street.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't live in the sea, so it's a related species, because there are loads of different species of these.
Yeah.
We've mostly been talking about the one that eats ships, which is one specific species of shipworm. This one lives in mud,
okay,
and it doesn't burrow into wood. It builds this chalky case around itself, and it can get up to 5 feet long.
Wow.
It's so big.
Same size as Nicki Minaj.
Same size as Nicki Minaj.
And 40 times longer than the smallest monkey with a soap. But you said, Dan, most shipworms are 8 to 18 inches long, and this can be 5-6 feet long, but it doesn't eat wood. That's the weird thing about this shipworm.
Yeah, it's bizarre. But basically, there was a team of scientists who found one, and they found it because someone in the Philippines had taken a film of it on YouTube. They'd been searching for it for ages without success, and then someone found it on YouTube, basically.
Wow.
But you can see them pouring it out of its shell or whatever it is, and it's absolutely disgusting. It's really it's the stuff of nightmares. It's really cool.
But if amazing. It was called Muddy Nymphs, would you eat it?
Yes, absolutely. I have 12. Yeah.
Okay, that's it. That is all of our facts. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in contact with any of us about the things that we've said over the course of this podcast, we can all be found on our online social media accounts. I'm on at Schreiberland on Instagram. James?
My Instagram is No Such Thing as James Harkin.
And Andy?
Mine is at Andrew Hunter M.
John, you're also online?
Yes, I'm on Instagram as John Lloyd QI, all one word.
Yeah, very exciting. And just to remind everyone, The Meaning of Lif has been reissued. It's the 42nd year. So The Meaning of Lif is 42.
Yes.
And that's in all bookshops now and online. So get it for Christmas for someone you love. It is, for my money, it's the funniest book that's ever been written. John Lloyd and Douglas Adams, the co-writers. Now, also, if you want to send us any facts that you want us to put into our shows, either drop us a line or littlefishpodcast@qi.com is the place to get us all. Andy goes through all of those emails. He picks out the best bits and we bring them to those shows. So do send them in. And the way of hearing drop us a line is via our very exciting private members club, Club Fish. There's tons of exciting things going on there, including XL episodes of the main episodes that you usually hear. So all the unreleased material, bonus episodes, and so on. So just head to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish and check out the various different tiers there. Otherwise, just come back next week because we're going to be back with another podcast. We will see you then. Goodbye.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.